Welcome to the Idea Talks, where we discuss big ideas. The Idea Talks is a bi-weekly podcast with Josh Tice and other leaders on big ideas for life, leadership, and ministry. And I'm your co-host, Drew Pollinencia, and we are glad you're here. For more information on this podcast, visit ideanetwork.church.
Welcome to episode 80. The big idea for this episode is an Ask Me Anything. How do I prevent gossip in the church? How do I lead men? And when I have to fight a deacon, how does that go down? All this on today's episode. Hey, Drew, do you see what I'm holding in my hands?
No, it's beautiful, isn't it?
I know. I can't believe it's finally here. I've been waiting for this moment.
What's so special about this moment, Josh?
Well, we finally have a copy of the Idea Journal 2021.
No way.
Yeah, no, I mean, and they're shipping. Like, they're shipping. People are getting them right now.
It's awesome.
Well, I don't know if you're listening to this and you have not ordered the copy of the Idea Journal 2021. I know. What is your problem? Look, you clicked on this because you saw the title was Dissecting the IFB Circles. And that's just because you want to hear all the dirt. But before you hear the dirt, you gotta buy the book.
So is the dirt in the book? Is that what you're saying
now? No, I don't know what I'm saying. All I'm saying is it's going to be a great episode. Buy the book. It's a great, hey, what is it? Like 15 different authors, one resource. It's going to be amazing. Buy the book.
Welcome to this episode of the Idea Talks. This is episode big 80.
80. That's how old Moses was when God called him.
Man.
I don't know what that has to do.
I don't know what I'm going to be doing when I'm 80.
80 years old, we'll be walking around in canes, I guess. With canes. I'm thinking canes.
Oh, not with a cane.
Yeah.
At Raising Canes.
You know, honestly, though, I've thought about it. I genuinely hope to be in heaven at 80. Like, now, if you're listening to this and you're like, I'm 80, fine, live to be 120.
It's fine, though.
I'm 80, I can't believe you said that. I can't believe you said that. All right, relax. Grandpa, I love you, okay? Yeah. I do, but here's the thing. I don't want to be to 80. I want to go to the kingdom, man. I've lived my whole life to see the eternal kingdom of God, and if I'm sitting here with my back's hurting and my cane, yeah, I'll be like, Jesus, please let me come home.
Yeah.
But I can't believe we made it to 80 episodes.
80 episodes. We're going to reward you guys with AMA number 4 for us.
AMA number 4. Ask me anything, which is exactly what people have been doing. They've been emailing me based on previous episodes and asking all sorts of questions. And we always have a whole list of these. So if we don't get to yours, we really are sorry. We try to categorize and think what might be most applicable to most of the audience. And so we have some really good questions that have come in. We figured we'd ask them. If you have questions, where can they email them to? Well, you can email them to josh@ideanetwork.church. Ooh, excuse me, josh.tice@ideanetwork.church. Just email me josh.tice@ideanetwork.church. And we will try to get to your questions, but we have some good ones for this one, right, Drew?
Yeah, let's start off with a softball.
Okay, softball.
What hair products do you use? Apparently somebody wants to know that.
That seriously came in, right?
It's on here.
Yeah. So. Look, man, I don't use hair product. I walked right out of the shower and this happens. It's
disgusting.
Yeah, it's really gross. I just have never, I've never even touched, no.
I can't believe you'd lie on this podcast.
Yeah, this is the first time, right? I don't know. I use some.
You go to
stuff.
A good barber. In town.
I go to
I think
a
we
good
go to
barber.
The same barber, at least sometimes.
He's great, isn't he?
Yeah.
You go to Henry too, right?
Yeah. I don't have Henry a lot because he's busy, but yeah.
Who do you normally get? Veet?
Veet is good.
Yeah.
Denise is good. I don't know. Yeah.
Denise is a Christian.
Yeah.
Did she tell you that?
No.
Yeah, she is. Yeah. Ask her. You ask her about end times and she'll be like, ooh, I want to talk about the rapture.
Oh,
yeah,
that's cool.
She's a good lady. Yeah. I use some paste is what I use. And then I use another type of paste.
Do you remember the brand name? Suavecito maybe? Paul Mitchell?
No, it's like Old Spice.
Oh, okay.
It really is. It's like a sticky paste, and then I do another, like a hard paste on the side, and then I use hairspray. I actually use 3 products for my hair.
Gosh, it's a lot.
Yeah, I know. And I know, look, here's the thing. I don't care. I know saying that as a man in America right now, you're thinking, oh, well, this guy. That's the old man is back. I can't believe he called me 80 years old and old, and he wears 3 hair products. Look, I do what I want to do, and I don't care what you think.
There you go.
But my hair looks good.
It does look good.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you got a good hairline.
I appreciate that, and so do you, my friend. And look, here's the deal. Nobody cares about this question, number one. Everybody wants to get to why they really listen to this episode.
All right, next question. How do we engage men in small groups? I currently have a church of approximately 500 people, Thriving Teens Children's Ministry, during the midweek service, but I'm having trouble getting the young 20 to 40s husbands or fathers to engage and attend midweek Bible study service. I've been asked to help and lead a new focus on engaging this demographic through small group discipleship focus during midweek service. Any tips or curriculum that you would have that you recommend would be great.
Okay, bro. So you just tapped into my wheelhouse. I've been extremely passionate about this the last 3 or 4 months, engaging young adult men in ministry. I found the same problem going on in our church. We were doing very well in the age demographic of old men like Drew in their 30s, families.
In their prime.
In their prime. But what about these youngsters, man? What about these pre-millennials? I mean, we used to think of the millennials as youngsters, but now, nah, I mean, like the youngest millennial is like 27 now. What is that about?
That's crazy.
Yeah. So how do we engage this 18 to 30-year-old group? What we did is we created a new ministry. I'm going to do an entire episode on this down the road. I have an entire session next week at the Idea Summit. By the way, you should come to the IC Idea Summit. I have an entire session where I'm going to be talking specifically about this issue. How do you engage and mentor young men? Here's what I'll say off the top. I have failed as a pastor in properly focusing my attention on discipling and mentoring the next generation of young men in ministry, which is a terrible failure. I mean, Jesus gave us a very clear model of how he took 12 men under his wing and ministered and mentored to them. Then the New Testament makes it very clear that the elder women ought to spend time teaching the younger women, the younger elder men ought to spend time teaching the younger men, and I've not done that well. So I have restructured my personal schedule, and I'll talk about this another time, to really reflect my intentionality of discipling and spending as much time as possible. And so way back in the beginning of the fall of last year, I began to make plans. And then back in the first week of December of last year, I changed my entire schedule. And now it reflects much more a time with young men mentoring and coaching them. So I would say, first of all, there's a mindset shift that needs to take place.
I think that mindset shift is a good one. I remember, sitting in even a deacon's meeting recently where we talked about having a large age span represented even our deacon in the leadership ministry.
Yeah.
And I think about it wasn't necessarily said, you know, we don't have it written down anywhere, but like we definitely didn't have anybody under the age of 30 as a deacon or even like consider that as a possibility.
Yeah.
But I think about, trying to have your focus shift from just, you know, the 30 somethings to like 60 somethings and probably spreading out a little bit more, you gain something on both sides of that spectrum. And I think, you know, your emphasis, you placed on that recently. I saw you post a picture on Instagram where like our platform was full of a meeting you had with just that demographic of people. Right.
Yeah.
And the reality is like in very well 5 to 10 years, those are the, maybe even less time than that, those people will be the leaders of Southern Hills.
Precisely. It's looking at your congregation and asking, okay, who are going to be the deacons? Who are going to be the pastors in 5, 10, and 15 years? You say, well, I mean, why would you look for a deacon that is under the age of 30? This is what I want you to do. I want you to Google the ages of the founding fathers. Go ahead and do it. Pause the episode. Google ages of the founding fathers. You're going to be shocked. There was one old man named Ben Franklin among them. The rest of them, my word, they're about 40 years old and below. And the vast majority are right there at that 29 to 31 year age. Then go ahead and do this. Start doing the research to see how old the disciples of Jesus were. I mean, Jesus was 33 years old, and the vast majority of his disciples around that age or younger. So
how old was Steve Jobs when he founded Apple? How old was Bezos when he founded Amazon?
Yeah, man, Musk? Like, we've got to take advantage of the passion of youth. We have to address, when you look at the scriptures, so much of it is addressed to the young man. Look at Proverbs, look at Ecclesiastes. And so why is it that we spend the vast majority of our time? I am not saying in any way that we shouldn't take care of grandma, we shouldn't take care of grandpa, we shouldn't take care of uncle and aunt, we should take care of everybody. But many of these people have been walking with Jesus so long, their walk with God is solidified. But these young men have captured my heart, and to reach out to them and mentor them appropriately. Now, one of the things we've done improperly is we've delegated that responsibility often to Bible colleges and universities. Oh, if you really want to be discipled, then leave. And in our society, as we move forward, I'm wondering how applicable or how realistic that is. We don't know what's going to go on in the years to come. And the responsibility of mentoring doesn't mean that you have to open up a Bible Institute, doesn't mean you have to start a Bible college. All it means is that you have a responsibility to take the young men that God has sent you and change your schedule. First of all, change your mindset, change your schedule, and establish times to meet with them. Then also, I'm not going to give all the next episode away or whenever we do an episode on this, but then establish very high accountability requirements. When I met with these guys and we set up this system, we made it very, very clear you need to be accountable. We're going to talk a lot about that. So as it relates to your specific question, how to get them involved, I think you do have to change your mindset, focus on them, preach to them, change your schedule, go out with them and tell them, I need you to make a commitment to church. I need you to decide to be here every Sunday. I need you to decide to be in small group every week. I'm just asking you. And if you're not ready for that, fine. I'll still be your pastor. Love you, pal. I just had this conversation with somebody this week. I remember texting back and forth. Sweet guy. He said, hey, pastor, I'm just not ready to make that commitment. To which I replied, I totally understand. I love you. I believe God has something great for your future. Yeah. But the reality is I know it's going to be a couple years before I can really impact that guy. That doesn't mean I should not go to the other men and really say, this is what's required. Boom, 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 boom. Now, when you put those kind of lists in front of young men, they have a tendency toward legalism. If I do these seven things that you're telling me, then God likes me more? No, God likes you the same, but I like you more. I don't like you. No, you can't say that.
No, but I mean, I think there is a reality to that. I think, you know, when you thrust young men into leadership, the natural tendency is for us that are in middle age or older, they say, well, what happens if they make a mistake, right? Or whether if we put them on a platform, you know, what happens if they fall? Like, can you not name me a 30-year-old that's fallen into sexual sin or a 40-year-old that's fallen into drunkenness or a 50 or 60-year-old who's left his wife for, you know, promiscuous reasons? Like, no, like it happens at every age group.
Right,
but I'll say this though, the thing that is good and healthy for young leaders is to thrust more responsibility on them. There's a movie, I wouldn't necessarily recommend it, but it's called Glory, right? And there's the whole premise of the movie, I don't want to give it away, but like it takes place right in the middle of the Civil War where this legion of soldiers there's a whole legion of black soldiers that have been put up basically as a parade prop, and they have no purpose. There's never going to be a tendency or a license for them to fight in the war. So they start, you know, arguing amongst themselves in the camp, and they get really grumbly and they get dissatisfied because there's no fight to go fight. There's no purpose for them. And I think about that especially when we talk about young leaders. Wow. The best thing you can do is sometimes thrust responsibility onto them so they grow up, to be honest. And that becomes a maturing process for them. They'll either sink or swim.
Yeah, and you're thinking to yourself, well, the Bible says don't lay hands suddenly on any man. I agree, and that's true of the 65-year-old businessman who gives a lot of money to the church. It's also true of the 25-year-old. But if you take time to plan, pray, and actually spend time discipling and maturing them, by the time that person goes two more years, whether 65 turns to 67 or 25 turns to 27, you have just helped create a deeper disciple and a great leader for the future of your church. So I definitely think you're heading in the right direction, bro. So keep going, focus on those young men, build the next generation of leaders in your church.
All right, so next question, how do I prevent disunity in our church and deal with existing gossip?
Ooh. Any more specific details there?
That's it.
How do you prevent?
It's kind of a really open-ended question.
Yeah, disunity and prevent gossip. Read it one more time. Let me make sure I get the full.
How do I prevent disunity in our church and deal with existing gossip? So it sounds like they just maybe got into a church or they've been at a church for a while.
Yeah, boy. Okay, so two things I would say. They both begin with C. Number one, confrontation. And number two, Corinthians. So the first one, confrontation. I know a lot of guys will say, hey, I'm not that confrontational. I used to say that all the time. I've stopped saying that because I've decided I have to be confrontational. The only way that I could be like Jesus is that I'm confrontational against people. Jesus was extremely confrontational with the Pharisees. When the rich young ruler came up with this attitude of, I have earned everything, now I will earn eternal life, Jesus was extremely confrontational. He was very confrontational and loving with the woman at the well, very confrontational and loving with Nicodemus. He was confrontational. The only way I can be like Jesus is to be more confrontational. in a gracious, loving way. So I think it begins with confrontation. And if somebody is causing gossip and disunity within the church, to be bold enough to address that. Here's the thing. If somebody was deciding themselves to be a member of your church, but every single Sunday they wanted to walk in, sit down on the front row, and they slept with two different women, and they were married to one, and they want to bring their girlfriend. Every Sunday they sit on the front row with their wife and the girlfriend, and then they keep having, and you don't deal with it, because come on, I mean, you're confrontational. And so then they have kids. And all the kids from the wife sit on the one side, and all the kids from the girlfriend sit on the other side. Are you going to be cool with that? Or no, you're not, because you have a responsibility to perform church discipline, to lovingly pull them aside and say, what are you doing, idiot? Stop it, because that's not what Christians do.
I don't want to do it.
Then go live with the Corinthians. Live with the Corinthians. You're not allowed to be part of us anymore. What do you mean? You're not us anymore. Get out. Period. Like, that's how it works. That's confrontation. You would do that when it comes to sexual sin. Why would you not do it when it comes to disunity and gossip? Here's the deal, guy. Here's the deal. The New Testament actually confronts gossip and disunity more than it does the sexual sin of Corinth. Yet we, as Baptist pastors, are often, and I assume most of you are Baptist, some of you are not, but we as pastors within Christianity, we're often so willingly to jump on sexual immorality and not disunity and gossip within the local congregation. So when you do so, do it in the same spirit as the Word of God says, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted, go in with humbleness and love and patience and talk to them, but say, look, here's the thing. If you're going to keep gossiping and if you're going to keep causing disunity, let me share with you a few passages in the Scripture where Jesus says that this is wrong. Take them to John chapter 17. Take them to throughout the book of Ephesians. Take it very clearly to the book of Colossians, and walk them through the passages on disunity, and teach them. The other thing would be confrontation. I said Corinthians. The reason Corinthians is because that's one of the main themes of the book of 1 Corinthians. I just preached through it back in 2020, and it helped our church tremendously in a time of high disunity. By the time this podcast comes out, it'll be right before Idea Network Summit. If people are not talking about the summit, I'll tell you what the other thing they're talking about in the world. They're going to be talking about the vaccine. So we're recording this, to be honest, we're recording this, a month and a half before it airs. Here's my prediction. By the time this airs, the big controversy and fight in our society and in our churches especially will be the vaccine. If you don't get the vaccine and encourage other people not to get the vaccine, you want old people to die and you want to kill people. If you do get the vaccine, you want to shoot baby body parts inside of you because you don't care about the unborn. Now, I know even right now there are people that are listening to this and you're enraged that I would slightly roll my eyes at your position. What Satan, I believe, is going to be doing now is he's going to shift his focus of causing disunity in 2020, which was all about masks, all about an election, all about race relations. And he's going to say, okay, we have already caused enough disunity with that. What's a new way we can cause disunity? Let's have Christians fight about not only whether or not they'll get a vaccine, whether or not everybody else will get a vaccine. And so the whole Church of God in 6 weeks, in 12 weeks, are going to be fighting about the fact you don't care about life as much as I do because you get or you don't get the vaccine. Here's the thing. The book of 1 Corinthians addresses all this. The book of 1 Corinthians says, I don't care what you're fighting about. It's like a mother and a father pulling the children into the room saying, I don't care who took what. I don't care who stole your chocolate. Stop your fighting or you're all getting punished. And I see this constantly in the New Testament. I also see this constantly in the church. And the reality is we need to fight. If we're going to fight for something, we need to fight for unity. So I would say preach the book of 1 Corinthians, and I would say confront those who are causing disunity.
You recently did that, or have been doing that this entire year. So if they want some reference material, they
can. Yeah, go on to the YouTube channel, which Drew and Michael do a great job at holding those together and keeping them for posterity. But go on, I preached through the entire book of 1 Corinthians this last year, and you're more than welcome to steal whatever you can steal.
All right, last question. I just listened to your Idea Talks episode 16, How to Leave Right, one of our more popular episodes. It brings up a question that I've been wondering about. If a pastor has a deacon that he cannot work with and the deacon will not step down or leave, should the pastor consider leaving in order to allow the ministry to survive? Would love to hear your thoughts. It's a tough one.
Yeah. So let me get it straight. There's a pastor or there's a deacon in this church, and that it doesn't appear that this deacon is going to leave. Or
sounds like the pastor and him are fighting.
And they're at a stalemate.
Yeah.
You're a deacon. What do you think?
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
I think.
Is that our situation? Are we fighting to the point where one of us got to go?
Not that I'm aware of, unless you want to tell me something.
On the podcast, let's do that. Yeah. This church ain't big enough for the both of us.
Yeah. I've definitely have met deacons like that.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, you know, how some people really thrive off power. And I think about if you give them a little bit of it, they have to take a lot of it because that's what they feel like they have control over in life. But I personally have never been in a situation where I feel like I have enough power in this situation to be like, it's you or me and it's not me.
Yeah. Yeah. If that's what's going on within your congregation, then this person has a high level of influence, mm-hmm. a very high level of influence.
Yeah.
And so it is a tough situation because if you're going to be kind of like, hey, it's either me or you, and you go to the church and it's him, and it's like, then you better be packed
right.
and ready to go. Here's the thing. Oftentimes, deacons can be either the greatest source of joy or the biggest pain in the butt for a pastor. This last year, and I don't say this because Drew is here, I've told our deacons this multiple times, they have stepped forward like I've never seen and are holding together small groups in church, parts of the church that I've never expected. It's been awesome this last year in 2020. I haven't had a lot of these negative reactions primarily because, we started a church, and so therefore we were able to be part of the process of selecting and be a part of deacons. Deacons will often get a bad rep, and let me explain why. Oftentimes it happens because they have been more faithful to staying at one location than the pastors have been. So in a church where a pastor only sticks around 2 or 3 years, but the deacons have been there for 20 years, no wonder the church trusts the deacon's perspective more than this guy, because this guy's just going to come in. If you've ever worked in the secular world and you have new management come in and they change everything, and you know in the back of your mind, in 24 months, we're going to have a new guy with all his new rules come in here. You just roll your eyes and kind of deal with it. So longevity is one of the only things that's going to build trust between you and the congregation and between you and this deacon. So first of all, I would say compassionately, be patient with this guy. He may have dealt with a lot of what he thinks is just another you. Like, oh man, there's just another guy causing problems. So be patient with him.
We talked some about this on episode 45 with our head deacon, if you want to call
that. Oh, that's right, Michael. Yeah.
And I think about, you're right, like, I think everything in life kind of goes behind a difficult question we don't want to ask. I have a lot of theories about that. But like, have you sat down and had enough conversation to ask him, like, what's the source of it?
Yeah.
Like, what truly is the heart of the issue here? Is it literally just me as a person you can't stand? Or to your point, is there a lot greater context there? Like, do you think I'm just going to change everything because I'm the third person to come in and do this, and you've already seen a pattern of things that's happened before me?
See, that's a beautiful question, to sit down and actually have that conversation with that person and say, let's talk about this. It seems like we're at an impasse quite often. Can I ask why? Like, what's going on? Is it me? Is it you? Is it our personalities are not great? Are you thinking I'm just here for temporarily? Maybe if it's a philosophical or theological issue. By the way, most of the time, you go right for theological, philosophical, or methodological issues. Most of the time, it's not. Most of the time, in my experience, there's personality conflict that's going on, and they're actually willing to bend on some of these philosophies or methodologies as long as they have a strong relationship with you. So I would say go and secure thy friend, as the scripture says, and make sure thy friend, and if you can, then you're able to secure your friend and then move forward in the ministry together. And if not, pal, here's what you got to do. Let me shoot straight with you. If in the back of your mind you might leave in 18 months, then you better not mess up that church by getting rid of that deacon. You're going to fight this deacon off tooth and nail and then get the church behind you. And then the deacon takes off and then you're like, I won. And then 3 months later, you get a better offer somewhere. You just hurt those people because that guy could have helped them. Now, if you say, no, I'm in it for the long haul, If you're in it for the long haul and you're going to be there for years, then what you want to do is you want to, if it comes down to a fight, fight. Fight. So you can fight them. You can say, you can begin to plan out your strategy. You say, what do you mean my strategy? How many people are supportive of him and his position? How many people are supportive of you and your position? Who can you talk to convince of your position? You say, he is not budging. I've sat down. He will not. And he is done. I had this conversation with a guy not too long ago. And he said, this guy is absolutely 100% just wants me out of here, but he can't legally do it. There is no coming together on this. I'm like, okay, then what do you do? He's like, what do I do? Should I just leave and let him take over the church? No, you're the pastor. The people hired you. So fight. You say, how do you fight? Well, you don't physically beat him up, but you have to start talking to the congregation. Then what you need to do is you need to get an old-fashioned notepad and pen. All right? So I'm going to tell you what maybe you've never heard anywhere else, but I'm going to say it because I think it's the right decision. Take an old-fashioned notepad and pen, and you start writing down every voting member on a piece of paper. And then you start counting it out like they do in the Senate and in the House. Who's with me and who's with them? Then everybody's that's with you, then go and talk to them. Be like, hey, just so you know, I'm thinking about doing such and such, but Deacon so-and-so doesn't want that. I just want to make sure that we're on the same page. Then everybody that supports his, go one-on-one. Look them in the eye. Don't be afraid. And say, hey, confront them. Say, hey, I just want to check. I feel like you may not understand why I want to implement such and such. Do you know why I want to implement such and such? And then walk them through. Convert as many people to your perspective as you possibly can, one-on-one, and that'll take months. Then if you're still in that scenario and this deacon feels like he's got, then just run the numbers. 80% of the people are supportive of what you want to do, 20% are not, then open up the church service and say, okay, today's the day we're going to talk about Deacon so-and-so and the problem that we have. I want to do X and he doesn't want to. Now, let's take a vote. Now, this is the vote. I'm going to do this with the church. We're going to do X. This is what we're going to do. If you don't want me to do X, then I'm going to resign. This is pulling out all the punches. And if you want me to resign, I will 100% resign because it's clear you want this man to lead your church. And if you want this man to lead your church, I will walk away. Not a problem. But if you want me to lead your church, I will do X. So let's put up for a vote. Deacon so-and-so, come on up. Oh, what is this? Oh, we're going to vote. Okay, we'll write it down. Yeah, write it down. Sure, we'll do recounts. You have 100 people there, and 80 of them say, Pastor, we want you to lead our church. All right. Okay, Deacon so-and-so, they want me to lead our church. Are you going to follow, or do you agree? No, I don't agree. Okay, we're going to ask for you to step down from being a deacon. Have them do it right in front of everybody. Like, have the fight. Here's the thing about Baptists. Baptists are not afraid to put down the gauntlet whenever it's needed to. And this might be one of those times. Be patient, listen to all the things we said earlier, but when it comes down to it, if it's about moving the church forward and this person is holding the church back and you're committed to move the church forward and you're committed to stay there, then fight it. Fight it and don't be afraid to fight it, and then do the numbers and realize I've got the numbers on my side, then tell the guy, I will leave. I will tell the church, I will move away, and they will be stuck with you as a pastor. All right. Then the guy's going to be like, yeah, I don't think I want that. Great. Then sit down and follow or go be a deacon somewhere else, bro. So I think ultimately you have to do that. If you have the boldness to do that, it's going to split your church and your 20% will be gone. But then you could take that 80 and you can move forward. So I would say if it comes to that, do that. If it doesn't always have to come to that, though. What you can do is you can try to win them over, try to win each individual over, try to explain to the deacon. But if it comes down to a fight, don't be afraid to fight.
Well, that's AMA number 4. Hope you enjoyed it. Climbing inside the mind of Josh Tice a little bit more.
Yeah, it's kind of scary in there.
It is.
I have to live there all the time.
It's all right. It's okay. Yeah, if you have more questions in the future, Josh Tice?
I think it's Josh Tice at ideanetwork.church. Yeah, that's it.
All right. And we'll have more of these in the future. Thanks so much for listening. If you would like to reach out to us, drop us an email at joshtice@ideanetwork.church. If you benefited from this podcast, we ask that you take a moment to show your support by subscribing, rating, and reviewing the podcast on iTunes. Thanks again for joining us, and we will see you right here again at the Idea Talks podcast.